You look like an angel. What happened?
You had 3 stents put in.
Is that a lot?
For a man your size, no.
I wish you would have stayed fat. I'm like, yeah, okay, that's what they're going to say at my funeral, you know? They took his arms, his legs, his heart exploded, but thank God he kept the weight on.
Now, after reaching his level of success, he has been able to focus on his health. That's now. But be clear, getting here wasn't easy.
I only got 3 auditions in that whole pilot season, and the last one was Mike and Molly. It was literally a Hail Mary into the end zone. There's a million no's before there's a yes.
He's a comedian, actor, now even a healthy living advocate, and he's here, Billy Gardell.
And you can hear me and see me on The Pulse with my man, Bill Anderson.
I don't know how much longer I can put up with him. I mean, he's really starting to drive me crazy.
Guys, welcome to another episode of The Pulse. By now, you know what we do. Every week, talking to people who are doing cool things with interesting careers, with great stories. And today's guest absolutely falls into that category. He is an actor. He's a comedian. Some of your favorite shows, Mike and Molly, Bob Hart's Abishola. I got to throw Bad Santa out there just because, yeah, I'm one of those who followed that. A comedian and also a really cool story because he may look a little different to you after a health journey. Actor, comedian, Billy Gardell. How are you, sir?
Hey, man, thanks for having me on this morning. Yeah, I'm the same guy, just less calories.
Yeah, right? That's an interesting place. And we might as well start there because it is same guy, less calories. But it was for people who knew you in some of those roles we were talking about. Has it been shocking, supportive? Like, how have people's response been since you had such a transformation?
Well, you know, I kind of got my anonymity back. Because people really don't recognize me until I speak, because my voice is like a car horn. And then they go, oh, you were the guy from Mike and Molly or Bob Hart's Abishola. And that's okay, man. It's worth what it gave me in the health department. I was in a place where it was I had to make some serious changes health-wise. And so about 3 years ago, I went and got bariatric surgery. And now I just kind of live like all the people I used to make fun of. You know, I'm eating cottage cheese and fruit nowadays. But, you know, it was time. I outrun the numbers as long as I could. And then I just had to make a big change. And mostly it's incredibly supportive. I try to be very open about it because the internet's filled with crap. You know, there was a group on Facebook that said I ate magic gummy bears to lose this weight.
Oh, Lord.
And inevitably somebody will come up and go, did that work? And I'm like, use your head, man. Gummy bears are what got me in trouble in the first place. So, you know, I'm grateful that this change has happened. I'm not on any medicine. My type 2 diabetes is gone. Like, it was really revelatory. But what happened was, is I came off Bob Hart's Abishola and realized that, you know, the comedy club business kind of moved to the internet. So I finished my show and I took a break from stand-up for a few years to get healthy. And then everything went to the internet and I made myself unrecognizable. So I got them right where I want them, man.
So you get to go back out there and reestablish. And what did Jay-Z say? Allow me to reintroduce myself.
Pretty much, that's it right there. And I'm trying to break into a newer audience as well, which is nice, you know. And it's been a joy. I thought I was done with stand up, but then the bug got me again. And I had some buddies really pleasantly annoy me. That's the way I'll say it. You know, my buddy Alonzo Bowden and Christopher Titus and Steve Byrne and Jay Leno and just some buddies of mine that were like, hey, man, what are you doing? You got to get back up there. But I was so concerned with fixing my health that when I was done with that, I thought, well, maybe I'm just done with it. And then I went and saw my friend Ian Bagg, and he was just having one of those nights where he was just murdering. He's already a hilarious comedian, but this was one of those nights where he was just slicing them in half. And I was sitting in the audience with my wife while we were watching. And I was just like, oh, no. I go, I got to go back. So those guys, I kind of owe a big thank you to all those guys because they really helped get me back up. And then I've kind of found this joy in being back up there again, and it's been really great to tour again.
I read an interesting quote in talking about that, and that's cool, by the way. I'll revisit that because we've had a lot of comedians on, and I love it when I hear that fraternity that exists. Because the other side of that is you have the discussions where there's a handful of people who are going back and forth at each other's throat, in comedy that we have not seen.
That's a bunch of low-hanging fruit high school crap. I don't get involved in that. The guys I'm from or with are from the old school, and we rooted each other on.
Yeah, and I like think to see each other's success.
That's a great thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's cool to hear those stories. We hear a lot more of them than the crap as you were talking about. But I read a quote or saw in doing the research, something you were just pointing out, that you had never done comedy in this body. You had never kind of gone out in the world like this. Has it changed anything? Like, has it changed your delivery?
Yeah, it didn't change my delivery. It changed the energy and it changed the rhythm a little bit. And now I got my feet under me in this new body, because when you know, as big as I was, I had quite a presence. So it was, I kind of went from the guy that was like, get out of the way now. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I bump you?
Right.
So I had to adjust down. It was like going from a tenor sax to an alto, you know, and I just had to find my sound, and I did. And lately the shows have just been really wonderful. And like I said, the warmth and support has been incredible. And then you always got 20% of people that just talk out of their behind. You know, like I hear dumb stuff online, like, oh, I wish you would have stayed fat. I'm like, yeah, okay. That's what they're going to say at my funeral. You know, they took his arms, his legs, his heart exploded. But thank God he kept the weight on. You know what I mean? It's just insane. But that's the nature of the internet. You know, 8 good comments and then 2 people that are just living in space.
Who need to be ignored. It's like, could you please be unhealthy so that you can keep me entertained? Like, if that's where somebody comes from, I think that's an easy one to just kind of dismiss.
Yeah, I don't even respond.
That's insane. All right, so the people, we talked about it, obviously, but it was 170 pounds or so that you lost. So you lost a whole other person.
173, but who's counting, right?
There you go. Good for you. So let's backpedal just a little bit, because you're back on tour, and we're going to talk about that. Coming to Philadelphia, October 19th, Live Casino in Philadelphia on tour. And we'll get into kind of the specifics of that. But backpedaling a little bit, what we do on this show, initially, how'd you get started? Because you don't have the traditional comedy journey, it doesn't seem like.
Well, I don't know if there is a traditional comedy journey. It's kind of all hodgepodge. But the way I started was I was working at a warehouse in high school, and I did my first open mic night December 28th, 1987. And I think I was 17. And I snuck into the club and got up on the open mic list. And my buddy Ben Rock drove me down there, and we snuck in together. He was he's actually a guy that ended up being a production designer and helped with the creativity of the Blair Witch Project and went on to his own. We were in drama together in high school, so we did that together, which was great. And it bit me. That first night, I was just really good for 5 minutes. And then it just bit me, and then I sucked for like 2 years. But the way I got back into the clubs was, the 3 guys that owned these clubs. I came to them and I was honest and just said, look, I was underage, but I want to be here, so I'll do whatever it takes. And they were like, we knew you were underage. We were just waiting to see if you'd tell the truth. And so they were happy I did. And the way we got around it was they gave me a job. Okay. At 18, they gave me a job at the club, like just sweeping the club up, cleaning the bathrooms, wiping up the bar area, you know, and then I was around it at least. And then I was hosting people and answering the phones during the day and, you know, and just being around. I always tell my son, and I tell any young person, you know, there's a lot of conjecture about how to do something and all this. And yeah, it's great if you can get a higher education and all that. But the most important thing is whatever it is you want to do, get around it. Mm-hmm. If you get around it, you're going to kind of hear how to do it and how not to do it. And it's up to you to discern that. And so I just wanted to be around it. And then before I knew it, I was hosting shows. And then, you know, you meet some comics. And then on the, you know, they're like, hey, why don't you come out and open up for me for 20 minutes? And then you kind of work your way out onto the road. And then I did the road, and first I did Florida for a while, and then I moved to Manhattan and got just killed. Manhattan sent me home just licking my wounds. I think I lasted, the first time I went to New York, I think I lasted about a year and a half. And then I moved, regrouped in Florida, and then I lived in Atlanta, then I lived in Chicago, and I drove to every state back in those days, just doing gig to gig to gig. And then after 10 years of that, I moved to Hollywood. And then did the road from there, and then also spent another, I guess, 12 years out there. And then after 25 years, Mike and Molly hit, and I was an overnight success after 25
years. Yeah. Those type, when I talk about the kind of standard comedy story, you said that there isn't one. One of the things I've heard a lot of, we had D.C. Curry. He came on and sure. was talking to us. And it was funny because he was telling a similar story of being in the clubs. And I'm gonna do this. I'm going to have a career with it. And he said that he made less money than his drink tab. And at the end of the nights, he ended up owing the clubs money. And people were like, you better get back up there and do several more shows because you owe us money.
I've been in very familiar situations. And I think that's how it was back in the day, you know?
That's nuts. Go ahead and just keep going. You owe us the money. It sounds like the stories you're talking about, the supportive friends, the kind of getting into the club and them saying, we know you were underage. We just wanted to see if you would tell the truth. It seems like a pretty cool entry into all of this, that if I do it the right way, if I grind, if I hustle, then you may end up with this kind of career. That's a nice start.
It was for me, it was perfect. And when I started, it was the late 80s. So, I mean, every week coming through the club, we had, you know, the best of the best back from that time period, which to me was kind of the peak. I mean, we had, you know, we had Sam Kinison come through there and Bill Hicks and all these great Dom Irrera, you know, these legends were coming through. So you got to watch these guys, and there was an education sitting right in front of you on how to be really good at this. And then back in those days too, man, you know, most headliners had been doing it for 10 years. You know, there was no social media. We were just selling the sign of the club. It was just something you did, like going to the movies. So it wasn't so specific. Comedy was kind of it was like a jazz thing. We went to the comedy club. But there was a million great headliners out there, like Kenny Rogerson and Ben Creed. And, you know, these guys that would just come in, you know, Steve Segrin, like these Uncle Lair, these guys would just come in and wreck the room. I mean, just wreck the room hilariously. And it was great to just be able to sit and watch that every week, you know. And my group of open micers was fantastic. I mean, my open mic night, we had, it was me, Daryl Hammond, a guy named Phil Moore, who went on to a lot of success through Nickelodeon. Wayne Brady was around. Carrot Top was around. Larry the Cable Guy was around. Tom Rhodes was around. And Rhodes and Larry the Cable Guy were already ahead of us. They were already featuring on the road. But, like, there was this eclectic group of really talented guys just sitting at Denny's on Wednesday night after open mic night trying to figure out how we were going to pay the bills. And then looking back, I'm just so proud of that little graduating class I came out of.
I feel like you have to really love that, though, because that sounds like work. Like, you're putting in that, you're putting it out there and getting, you know, almost like social media, except you're doing it in the room. Like, you're getting immediate response and then come back and do it again the next day if you want to pay the bills.
Well, I think if you, whatever you love, man, look, you know, it's like that old Tom Waits song. There's going to be two dead ends and still you got to choose. But you got to get up, move, get up, move, get up, move. You know, my kid wants to go into this business and I keep telling him, man, there's a million no's before there's a yes. Mm-hmm. So settle in. You can't take rejection personally. There's a no, on to the next play. It's like football. On, what's the next play? Okay, yeah, we threw a pick. Okay, on to the next play. And that's what it has to be. So your love of what you're doing has to supersede the fact that there's, you know, going to be rejection. But that's with anything. You know, it doesn't matter what you do. I mean, you want to be a doctor, you got to go to a million years of school. You want to be a lawyer, a million years of school. You know what I mean? Whatever it is you're doing, if you don't love it, you're not going to be able to endure the pitfalls. But I think looking back, you can, when you get through those pitfalls, they become experiences and things to write about and things to express. And I think that they actually play a valuable part. Plus, the more rejection you get, I think when you finally hit, the more gratitude you have, which is what happened with Mike and Molly, because that entire cast, me, Melissa, Reno Wilson, who's like my brother, me and Reno, the guy played Carl on my show, my partner, the cop. Mm-hmm. We were on a show 10 years before Mike and Molly, and we got canceled after 6 episodes. It was just one of those, you know, but me and him stayed friends, and he called 10 years later, and he was the one that called me about Mike and Molly. He's like, you got to get in on this Mike and Molly thing, man. It's us. You got to get an audition for it. And then I beat out all the Mikes and he beat out all the Carls, and we ended up being on there together. And that guy's, he's like my brother. But we had 10 years of, I didn't get nothing. I'm up for a yoga commercial. How you doing? You know what I mean? But so when it hit, we were all like, hey, man, we got good parking, we got free coffee, and we got insurance. Nobody blow this, you know? And so, and when you have gratitude, when you're doing something creative, I think the creativity doubles.
Don't mess up my benefits.
Don't mess up my benefits, brother.
I got good dental. Nobody messed this
up.
So I was reading, and it's the internet, so who knows if it was true or not. But there was an article that was talking about you were right around when Mike and Molly hit, you were getting close to frustration, like not sure you wanted to continue down this journey.
That might have been the most politest way I've ever heard that written. No, I was at my rope's end, man. Okay. I was in a place where, you know, I've been married to my wife for 23 years. God bless her, man. She's just, I don't know. She's been beside me, in front of me, or in back of me, whatever I've needed for 23 years. And these days, I thought I understood it then, but boy, do I get it now, man. She's a powerful woman. And we were in a tough place. I hadn't booked anything. You know, marriage goes through ups and downs, and thank God we're on the sweet spot now because we've been together long enough. Mm-hmm. But back then, that was 15 years ago, we were struggling a little bit, had a new baby, not a lot of money coming in. And, you know, so it was really a trying time. And I was at a point where it's like, I was going to go back to Pittsburgh and get on my favorite radio station, WDVE, with my buddy Randy Bauman. And he was going to give me a gig back there to be in, and I could bring my family and kind of settle into that. And I said, I'm going to stay for one more pilot season. And I only got three auditions in that whole pilot season, and the last one was Mike and Molly. It was literally a Hail Mary into the end zone. And then the world changed.
It's that, what's the quote? You never realize how close you are to success when you quit. And there's many people who may have stopped in that moment and never gotten around that corner.
100%. 100%, man. You're always an inch from the gold vein, you know?
It's amazing. All right, so you're on tour. Where right now you're on the West Coast.
Yeah, I'm in San Francisco. I did a little private gig up here, some corporate event. And then next week I'm going up to Grand Rapids, Michigan. I've been, I still do very well with corporate gigs, but I've gone back down into the clubs in some areas, because I'm working on this new hour, and I just hired a social media kid. That's how old I am. I just started social media about 3 weeks ago. But this kid's been doing a good job.
We'll follow you. We get your numbers up.
Well, I'm trying to break into a younger crowd. I'll tell you, one of the sweet things that's happening is, you know, I'm starting to get some younger kids because of social media, but when they realize what I do, some of them, not all of them, but some of them, they will actually bring their parents to the show. So they kind of come together. So I'm at that age where, and then I hear stuff like, you know, growing up, my mom and dad had your show on all the time. And, you know, I don't take any offense to that. I find that very sweet that they can connect that. And it's something they can do with their parents. And I try to do a show that you could bring your parents to. You know, I swear a little bit, but I talk about, they talk about being a father and having a 23-year marriage and being an empty nester. And the other thing that I've been really digging into is I'm a Generation Xer, okay? So we were great at fending for ourselves. So I've been trying to reach out to the young people through my work on stage and just let them know that there's somebody on their side, that there's somebody that's rooting for them. And if I can give you a couple, you know, life hacks, then I'm here to do it for you. I'm rooting for you because I got one of you. You know, I don't want to be the guy that's up there. My generation's so much better than your generation. I just think that's low-hanging fruit, and I don't think that pushes us forward.
You're not trying to be the get-off-my-lawn guy who's just mad at everything? Like, these young people don't know what they're doing these days.
No, I think that's low-hanging fruit, man. I would much rather connect and go, hey, here's what we did. You know what I mean?
It said, again, internet, truth or not, and I will try to say this in, again, equally polite way, because this one is actually positive. Very much so. It said that you were driven by this whole concept that I guess your father had, that, you know, you're just blessing people with making them laugh. If you can give them an hour of laughter, then it's worth it.
My father used to say, when you make somebody laugh, you bless them. That he truly believed that. And I thought, I remember him telling me that when I was about 10. It was very profound. And then we took a couple more steps. And then he looked at me and goes, that way you ain't got to go to church.
Fair enough.
They'd say to him, you don't go to church a lot, Mr. Gardeau. And he'd go, I'm more of a field agent. I'm one of God's field agents. So I just thought, what a neat way to go about this, man. You know, at the beginning of my career, it was, I think, for my own attention. It was like, look at me, look at me, look at me. I need my attention. But I think after you get some success and after you bought the watch you wanted and the car you wanted, you start to realize, I think there's a little bit of a higher calling in service. And if I'm concentrating on making my audience laugh and being of service to them and trying to help them forget this world we're living in just for a few minutes, then I don't worry about how I look or how I'm going to sound. And I don't have to worry, but the outcome takes care of itself. So I like staying on the service plane. I think that's a fulfilling place for me personally.
I feel like, and I certainly wouldn't know, but I feel like when you have achieved that level of success to kind of go back out on the road and do this, something bigger has to be driving you. And that's what it sounds like it is, because you don't have to do this anymore.
No, I don't. And that's where I'm at. And look, you know, my audience, you know, they were older when I was on CBS with Bob Hartz and Mike and Molly. And like I said, stand up in the clubs has now become an internet game. So it's almost like starting a band over. Like, there's certain areas that I'm going to go, I'm always going to do well, like Pennsylvania. And, you know, usually it did very well in Illinois. The show was based there. And you know, Florida, I do well. But there's all, you know, like in other places, it's, they're, my audience is either a little aged or the younger people don't know me. So I go and I do a comedy club, you know, and sorry about that. Somebody trying to interrupt us.
Yeah, you're all good.
And so it's like there's this joy of like, it's almost like starting a new band in a weird way, but you have experience. So you kind of know where you're going. And I'm really enjoying it, you know, and I like out in L.A. I've been going to there's a little club out there called Flappers in Burbank. And, you know, I go over there on Wednesday nights on the open mic nights looking for jokes with everybody else. And you see a lot of young comics that are hungry and trying to do this. And I just try to be supportive. And you know, it's nice when you run into a kind guy in this business because you remember that. You know what I mean? You remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounded like you had some experience.
Listen, I think everybody watching just went, yeah.
You remember those people, though. And I would much rather be that person.
No, you absolutely do. And we all appreciate you for being that person, because Lord knows there's some that are not.
No, it's chaotic right now, man. And everybody has a rush to be right. And, you know, we're all angry. And, you know, that's never going to fix nothing. Have you ever gotten in an argument with someone? They're yelling, you're yelling. And then somebody goes, oh, I see what you're saying.
Right.
That never happens. So I always feel like kindness and love and humility, if you can muster those things, they're the most powerful tools we have. That's just my belief. And I'm sure there's somebody who's going to watch this and go, I don't believe any of that. Yeah, okay. Well, you're going to be angry and talking to yourself the rest of your life. Good luck to you. Good luck.
They're in that 20% we were talking about earlier. They're actually probably not watching a show that's theme is Use Your Voice for Good. They probably turned it off as, you know, the opening music was playing. What is this positive nonsense?
No, you know what? They're actually the first ones to watch because they desperately want it, man. But they just don't know how to embrace it. So they'll watch and then they'll critique because that'll make them feel better because they don't have it. You know, there's an old Paul Simon line. Some people can never say the words I love you, but like a child, they're longing to be told. And I try to keep that in mind when I run into somebody's bitter, vibrating people.
I like it. It's good energy. Two more questions, and I'm going to let you go, because we're segueing naturally into the close of the show. So it's almost like you've been on TV before. You handle this.
Well, you're doing a pretty good job driving the car right now. Go ahead.
Appreciate you. October 19th, we're coming back to that, live casino here in Philly. You started touching on a little bit, but what are people going to see from Billy Gardell's stand-up show?
Like I said, man, I keep outside issues outside. I'm not going to drag you through politics or how I think you should think. We have enough of that, and God bless you if you're doing that stuff. I just want to talk about how we can all get together and find common ground again. And look, I don't have everything in common with everybody, but I speak from the heart. I talk about my family. I talk about my experiences. And sometimes a shared experience can bring people closer. So that's kind of what I drive down into.
Last question of this show with everyone is that theme I was telling you about, use your voice for good. We ask everybody what that statement means to them.
I think anytime you can bring anyone comfort or safety, that's why we're here. And I think if you can use your voice in that way, and you know, voice is metaphoric. It could be, you know, whether you're in entertainment, you're a show host or a podcaster or an influencer or an actor or a comedian, all the way to, you know, if you work at the library, you just never know what one little random act of kindness is going to do to somebody during the day. We never know what somebody's going through. And today, man, you know, everybody's vibrating on a pretty high level. So I like to be the one dude that doesn't make you matter during the day. And I think when you use your voice in that way, I think life rewards you. I think you put that out, and it can say, like, life's a boomerang. You know, you put crap out, crap comes back. You put good out, good comes back.
I love it. Perfect place to end. Billy Gardell, thank you for taking this time with us. We appreciate you.
Thank you, man.
Wish you continued success.
Thank you, man. Hope I see you in Philly.
Absolutely. Before we let you go, will you do a quick promo for your show?
Yes. What would you like me to do?
Just introduce yourself, and you'll see me coming up on the next episode of The Pulse.
Okay, you got it.
All right, whenever you're ready.
Hey, this is Billy Gardell, and I will be coming to the Philadelphia Event Center. And wait, what is that day? Is that October 19th?
October 19th, and it's live casino.
I don't even know where I'm at, Bill. All right, okay. Hey, everybody, Billy Gardell here. I will be at the Philadelphia Event Casino Center on October 19th. But more importantly, and you should watch this, I'm going to be on The Pulse with my man, Bill. I'm not sure what's our date for you?
I'm not sure of that yet. So I'm not sure of what date it's airing.
So how you want me to say that? I'll be on The Pulse with Bill Anderson. You want me to say that?
Yeah, that's
okay,
perfect.
Okay. Hey, everybody, Billy Gardell. I'm coming to Philly at the Event Center, October 19th. And you can hear me and see me on The Pulse with my man, Bill Anderson. Have a good day.
Appreciate you. Thank you very much. And we'll see you when you come in town.
Man, thank you. I appreciate your time today.
Absolutely appreciate yours. This was fun. Here's the person who's been yelling your name and wanted to wave to you.
Me and my wife, big fans.
Said that.
Right on. Thanks, man. I appreciate you guys very much.
You have a good one. Take care. Thank you so much for listening to the Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast today with actor and comedian Billy Gardell, sitting here in the studio with my producers. And just pointing out how he just seems like such a good dude. And that's always a positive feeling when the people that you see on TV, they may make you laugh on TV, or they may make you laugh when you see them on tour or their comedy show. But it's always better when you get a chance to talk to them and they just feel like legitimately good people with positive energy. That's what I got from him, and I hope you did as well. I really enjoyed that conversation. Go ahead and hit like, subscribe, follow, whatever it is that's on your screen that lets you get a notification every time another episode of the Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast is available. You can also download the Fox Local app so that you can watch all of our shows right there on demand, and hit me up on social media at Bill A. Fox 29. I leave you today as I always do. I'm in good mood. He's got us all in a positive, good mood. I leave you today as I always do, reminding you whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.